If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Welcome back and happy Father's Day. June is Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month, and the purpose is to raise awareness about the disease, promote brain health, and support millions who are affected by these diseases. Globally, over 55 million people live with dementia, and the problem is there are a lot of problems, but one of them are legal problems. And what should you do to get out in front of this issue, or what do you do when loved ones are being diagnosed with these types of diseases? And with us today in studio is my go-to estate planning and elder law lawyer, Katie Casey. She's one of the most accomplished elder law attorneys, one of the few certified elder law attorneys in Illinois, and she focuses her practice on long-term care, estate planning, special needs, Medicare and Medicaid issues. Welcome to the show, Katie.
Thanks so much for having me back, Karen, and thanks for highlighting this issue, which is affecting so many people.
It is, and there are two parts of it. One is, it's not if, but when somebody in your parameter, whether it's yourself or a family member or a friend, is going to have memory issues and dementia and Alzheimer's. And what can you do to get out in front of it so you don't end up having things happen that you don't want to happen? So let's just take this one step at a time. First of all, it's important for everyone to have an estate plan. And you've said this a million times, and so have I. But just reiterate, for all of us who are going to make a list of what they're going to do on Monday, one of them should be call an estate planning lawyer.
Yeah, everyone should have an estate plan in place. It's hard to confront the decisions that are required to have an estate plan, but if we don't have something in place, bad things happen.
Yeah, and tell us how the issue of loss of memory affects these legal issues.
So we might experience loss of memory for only 5 minutes of our life. That's sort of the optimal thing. Just right before we pass away, we have a brief period where we can't remember what's going on. We're not aware of things. We're not able to manage our affairs. Worst case scenario, we might have 10, 20 more years of living without being able to remember things well enough to manage our own affairs. And an estate plan includes documents that allow someone we trust, not someone who's chosen by another person, but someone we trust, to step in and make decisions for us if we can't make them for ourselves.
So what happens when you see somebody who's just starting to get to that point where they're forgetting where their keys are, they're putting things in the refrigerator like their shoes, or they're doing things, forgetting how to get home from their job? Tell us, is that too late to have an estate plan? And how do you determine whether somebody can actually devise an estate plan if they have these issues?
That's an incredibly difficult question I confront every single day, because it's different for everyone, right? Just because someone's been diagnosed with Alzheimer's or dementia doesn't necessarily mean they're not capable of making their own decisions. And just because someone's forgetting things doesn't mean that they're not capable. But it is a red flag, and it means we have to be really, really careful about whether someone knows what they're doing, because it's exactly when our cognition starts to fail that we begin to become at risk of making really bad decisions. And we might not want someone to be making decisions for us at that time, because we might be choosing the wrong person.
Yes, exactly. And so let's just say that the person we're talking about comes into you, and the family is worried about their loss of memory and their ability to make decisions. Is there ever a point in time where you get a doctor to do an examination of that person to have a record that says that that person is, in fact, capable of making decisions in an estate plan?
Yeah, all the time, Karen. I do it all the time. And I do it for a couple of reasons. Number one, I, as a lawyer, and you know this too, we're bound by ethical rules or professional conduct. We're not permitted to take signatures from people who don't know what they're doing, right? They have to have capacity in order to execute documents and make legal decisions. So for my own purposes, I want to know whether someone is capable of making decisions, and a doctor is in the best position to do that. Typically a nurse neuropsychologist is actually in the very best position to see if someone has the requisite capacity to make the decisions necessary for those documents.
And just without getting into the technicalities of the testing, but what kinds of tests do these doctors do to make the determination as to if the person knows what their decisions are and the ramifications of their decisions?
They're really involved tests, and they involve testing a wide variety of brain functioning. So you've probably heard of the mini mental status exam, which is something they do in healthcare settings to really test whether someone's got the ability to make medical decisions. And it focuses primarily on memory. But a neuropsychological evaluation is going to test all sorts of other things, because lots of cognitive impairments don't affect memory, or don't affect memory that significantly, but do affect your executive functioning. And executive functioning is what really helps you make decisions and get things done in your life.
Interesting. And so as an elder law attorney, how are you different than an estate planning lawyer? I mean, I think you're a subsection of that, because you have extra training and extra certification in issues that that basically arise for people who are older. But what is it that you know that maybe estate planning lawyers may not be up to speed on?
Yeah, so estate planning really kind of evolved to deal with death and taxes. And yes, we are all going to have to deal with death and taxes at some point, but what has really started to affect the community and our loved ones, our neighbors, our friends, our parents, is disability while living. Not being able to manage your affairs or get your activities of daily living done while you're alive has become sort of the principal problem of estate planning. So old-fashioned estate planning doesn't address that problem. Elder law estate planning really does affect that problem, because it involves who's going to manage your affairs for you. Where are you going to get care? How is that care going to be paid for? Are you going to pay for it privately? Are you going to access public benefits, long-term care insurance? All of those issues go into estate planning.
So many legal issues there that you have to have knowledge of to advise people. And what I like about how you deal with clients I refer and people I hear you talk to on the air here, it's kind of holistic. You know, you kind of get a wish list from somebody about how do you want to spend your days? Where do you want to live? Who do you want taking care of you? And all of those things can be provided for in a way that that makes sure that those 20 years that you have remaining, where you may not be up to, you know, your normal brain power, and it helps you live your life. I mean, when you sit down with someone, it's got to be a thorough examination of what they want.
It is. It's an ongoing conversation with a lot of clients. And you know, as an attorney, and clearly evidenced by your radio show, lawyers know how to talk to people, right? Lawyers know how to talk to people and find out what are their wishes. How do we talk about what we want as we age? Who do we want to be involved? Who do we not want to be involved? A lawyer can really help facilitate that conversation.
And it's like you said at the beginning, you know, it's not something that we want to talk about. And a lot of these issues you haven't thought about, right? Because we think we're going to be young forever, you know, and we only go one direction in life. And, you know, nobody has been through it before. We've watched our parents go through it, but we think it's not going to happen to us.
No one thinks it's going to happen to them, right?
Right?
No one thinks that. And I think it's sort of the subconscious hope that it's never going to happen to us. And that's the number one impediment to all of us getting our affairs in order, is the hope that it's never going to happen to us. But that's not realistic, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's the ostrich with the head in the sand. I'm here with Katie Casey. She is with the law firm of Dutton Casey and Messolaris here in Chicago. How do people get in contact with you, Katie?
They can call us at 312-899-0950.
And you can always email me at WGN at AskKarenConti.com, and I'm happy to give you Katie's number. Let's take a break. And does anyone have a question for Katie about estate planning, about these issues, about guardianship, anything that you've seen in the news lately? 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, or text to that number. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back. Happy Father's Day. We are talking to Katie Casey. She is an elder law attorney. In light of the fact that June is Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month, we're talking about estate planning in terms of, you know, what happens if your memory starts to fail or that of a loved one, and how can you deal with these issues if a person lacks capacity to even understand what they're doing. Let's talk a little bit about guardianship. Can you explain to our listeners what guardianship is in Illinois?
So guardianship in Illinois is essentially probate, but for the living. So you've heard of probate after death, right, where lots of people's estates go to be administered. Well, probate is a living case, generally handling somebody who's not able to manage their own finances and who doesn't have a power of attorney, or I should say an appropriate power of attorney, to make decisions for them. And so the guardianship proceeding is essentially a judge appointing a guardian to act for you, to make your decisions for you, and to manage your financial and personal affairs for you.
So let's just say I have a stroke and I am making really bad decisions, and I'm buying Lamborghinis that I can't afford, and I'm not taking care of my medical issues, and a loved one says that this person cannot manage her affairs anymore and I'm afraid she's going to really harm herself. Who brings what legal proceedings have to come before there's a guardian appointed, and who are the guardians?
Great question. So anyone, any interested person can file for guardianship in Illinois. So you could be just a concerned neighbor or friend. You could be a family member. And you're bringing a petition before the judge with a doctor's report that says this person doesn't have the ability to manage their financials. And you're proposing who the guardian will be. And that's the big question, right?
Right.
Who's the guardian?
Yeah. So if you're poor, there's a public guardian, right?
Correct. There's a public guardian and a state guardian.
Okay. And so I understand there's a new law regarding guardianship in Illinois. Katie, can you tell us about it?
There are a couple pieces of legislation that are pending right now. One of which is trying to protect the proceeding when hospitals bring petitions for guardianship over their patients. And that legislation is really aimed to protecting people from a hospital getting a private guardian appointed without doing their due diligence to try to find family members who would be appropriate to be the guardian instead. And there's also a piece of legislation pending about guardianship training, because just because someone's appointed guardian in a court doesn't necessarily mean they know what they're doing. So there is legislation that will require people to have both training on how to be a guardian of the person and how to be guardian of the estate.
And just generally speaking, when you counsel people and you're talking about executors and trustees and people who are going to manage your affairs after your death, or even guardianship during their lives, how do you choose somebody? How do you tell them to choose?
That's a hard one. Every family is really different. Everybody's personal situation is incredibly different. And a lot of people don't have a lot of options about who can serve in that role. I try to counsel my clients to find someone amongst their family members, their peers, their friends, their family of choice as to who is most loyal to what you would want to have happen to you. Who is going to best respect your wishes? To try to find somebody who really is going to do a good job. It can be hard to find someone who's good with money. It can be hard to find someone who's good at medical decisions. It's hard.
I mean, that is so true. And I have seen, just in litigation that I've handled over the years, when a trustee is appointed and doesn't know how to balance a checkbook, or doesn't have good executive functioning herself.
Exactly.
And is paying things late and is not putting money into the right investments or getting the right professionals to do and make those decisions. So, yeah, it seems like that person has to have not only your best interest in mind, but also some skills to do a bunch of things that they may not have ever done before.
A lot of people don't have those skills, Karen. And one of my dream jobs is to set up an ongoing high school education program that teaches people how to manage money on a basic level,
right?
Totally
agree.
How to deal with a checking account. What is a loan? What is interest? How to pay bills? How to use a credit card? How to invest money? How to deal with retirement accounts? What is an annuity? All of these things people have no literacy about.
And I would add to it, and I teach this part of the class, the family law part. You know, What is child support? What happens when you divorce? What happens when you marry? What property becomes your husband's when you get married? And what happens to your retirement upon a divorce? People don't understand that, even people who are older than high school aged, right?
And I see the consequences of that all the time, Karen, when people come to me and they're married and they have not appreciated the consequences of that decision.
Absolutely. Let's go quickly to Travis in Schaumburg. Hi, Travis. Can you quickly tell us what your question is? Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking the call. Sort of a two-part situation here. I'm divorced, no children. Let's see, I don't really have any assets to speak of. However, I'm involved in a situation where I have two pending lawsuits. And, you know, obviously that won't settle for a year or two, what have you. So I'm wondering if it would be a good idea to have a will made anyway.
Okay, that's a great question. Travis, I'm going to put you on hold because we're having a little bit of technical difficulty with your audio. Go ahead, Katie.
Yeah, Travis, it's a great idea to have a will. It's a little counterintuitive. You know, lots of people don't have what they consider to be a heck of a lot, yet everybody should have a will because a will is where you get to say. I mean, it's called a last will and testament. You are testifying on a document as to what you want to have happen to anything you have or may have at the time of your passing. It's your choice to say who gets what.
Absolutely. And what about doing it yourself? I know I'm going to have those questions. I have a program. I can go online and have it done. What is your read on that? I mean, obviously, you're in the business of not having people use those programs, but have you seen the effect of what can happen?
I see them all the time, and I see them coming from really reputable online sources, too. So I've been surprised at some really reputable online estate planning document creators have software that'll let you do it, and you would think, I thought when I saw the names, like, well, this should work, and I read them, and no, they don't. So I was surprised myself that something could be very reputable online and still not produce what you actually need.
Well, and that's the same with AI. You know, we're seeing people get their legal advice from AI. You're seeing people get medical and psychological advice. And I think one of the things that you miss by having a real lawyer is there's a human element. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you are going to ask a question and of something that I didn't even think of. I didn't even think to ask the device or the AI. You know, you came up with it because you have so many decades of experience that you have seen what can happen. You can see the disasters that occur. So you get out in front of them and ask the right questions.
And this goes back to a lawyer's skill in talking, like you do, right? Having a conversation. Lawyers are skilled at having a good substantive conversation and helping lead clients to a good decision.
Let's we had a caller who just dropped off who said, you know, how do you find someone who's affordable? And what about the cost? And justify the cost. If you have to pay $3,000 to $5,000 for an estate plan, maybe more, depending on what your assets are, why is it worth it? Why should we be spending this money?
That is a very good question, a very legitimate question. I really struggle with my clients. I'm always happy they find me, but I struggle when I see them trying to find a lawyer and spending a lot of time flailing around and not finding one that suits their needs. So if you're feeling frustrated about not finding the perfect fit for a lawyer, either personality-wise or price point-wise, I encourage people to keep looking. It's a hard job to find a good lawyer. It really is. The price and whether it's appropriate totally depends on your situation. But the point of an estate plan is to prevent legal problems down the road, right? So paying money up front should be less than what the potential cost of a bad outcome is going to be at the end of the road. I like to think of it like homeowner's insurance, right? You hope your house never burns down, but you are paying a not inconsiderable amount of money over the course of your lifetime just in case your house does burn down. So those documents, those legal documents, they're there in case something really bad happens, and they're supposed to save us.
And you're right. That's the best way to think about it. An estate plan is an insurance policy.
It is.
And, you know, your home is one of your biggest assets, if not your biggest asset. So, of course, you're going to, and the mortgage company might require you to have insurance over that asset. So if you are looking at your entire estate, whether that's, you know, a lot of money or a little bit of money, protecting it with a fee to a lawyer seems to me to be a great cost benefit.
And speaking of real estate in your home, one of the worst outcomes I see with people who don't have powers of attorney in place are people who forget to pay their real estate taxes.
Ah.
And when you don't pay your real estate taxes, they get sold annually at Cook County's annual sale, tax sale auction. And if you don't redeem them within a certain amount of time, you can lose your home.
Katie, how can people reach you? Thank you so much for coming.
They can reach me at 312-899-0950.
You've been listening to Katie Casey, C-A-S-E-Y. She's with the law firm of Dutton, Casey, and Messolaris. And, of course, you can always contact me, and I will connect you with Katie. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.